hear your dog. Sweeties.
Hey everyone, I'm Wah.
Chris. Hi, how are you?
And welcome to DocuSweeties. We're two longtime friends who discuss the riveting and sometimes trashy world of reality TV and docuseries.
Yes, but through our own lens, which is silly and Billy and Killy and Dilly, but also serious. And at the end of the day, hopefully mildly sweet.
Hello. All right, you guys. So today we're talking Quiet On Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, episode 2, Hidden in Plain Sight. Now, trigger warning. Mm-hmm. Not that the last episode didn't take us down some dark paths, but this episode is going to take us down a darker path. Mm-hmm. And so trigger warning to anybody who might have aversions, anyone, everyone who has aversions, all of us, we all do, to, child SA, hurt, crimes against them in a sexual nature. So, yeah, buckle up. So, last episode where we left off with this crazy documentary that has like shook a lot of us because we grew up watching these shows is that the writers on the show had terrible experience with Dan Schneider, and one of the writers, the female writers, she quits because he asks her to read some lines like she's having phone sex in the writer's room, and it is just awful. So in episode two, we get introduced to one of the stagehands. That's what I'm gonna call him because I can't think of the right name. His name is Jason Handy. So Jason Handy was somebody who earned the trust of the parents. He went around and like talked to all the parents, made them feel really comfortable, was like, hey, guys. And he was this guy from like middle America, very unassuming white male, blue eyes, like, you know, just really hokey and seemed really down to earth. That's how people described him. Mm. But Jason was harboring a very, very dark secret. And he put himself in a position in which he could be around children to be able to enact on these things.
Well, not just him. Also, technically Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon put him in a position to like be around children because he's basically a production coordinator on set for all that. So that's his job is moving the children from one area to another. So the parents might be in like the child's dressing room, and it's literally like your employer being like, yeah, you're on set. I'm just going to like take your kids from one space to where they're actually shooting. And so he is intimately allowed with children, even as are supervised and able to like undercut that and make relationships with them. And not only that, he is a production coordinator. He has no, it's annoying because these poor children are like, wow, everyone here can make or break me. What if he tells Dan that I'm a nightmare, that I won't be able to come back? But if what if he, this production coordinator, tells the director how great I am, the director tells Dan, and Dan tells Nickelodeon, and suddenly I'm the new Amanda Bynes. It's like horrible thinking like that. And so there's a young girl named Brandy who I think was like a guest star or whatever. And he befriends Brandy, and Brandy's mom is like, it's innocent enough. We go back to the house and he suddenly emails them and it's like, hey, it was like awesome working with you. Like, we have to get you back, you know? And Brandy's like, hey, mom, look at this email. Like, nothing harmful about that.
Yeah. So he creates a relationship with Brandy. Brandy's 11 years old at the time. And the mother thought that, you know, Jason was a great guy. And so him and Brandy have a friendship, and that's already a red flag. There is no reason that an adult male who is not a family member, like who was there at your birth or helped babysit you, is like your friend. And so she then starts to email Jason, and the mother in the beginning has supervised it. She is aware that the emails are happening. And I'm just like, is it because emails were so new
This is AOL. This is a dial-up. Like, you know, this is a family computer that she's checking in the downstairs area, you know, like maybe in the kitchen. That's where mine was. Like, this is not in her room. So, like, she's every time her daughter comes home from school, they're hearing the and making all of that. She's like, oh, you know, here comes a new email. And again,
you got mail.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's mail from Hollywood.
Your kitchen housed your family computer?
Yeah, like in the kitchen area of the house, there was like a little pantry, and the pantry had like a built-in desk
nook.
Okay. Desk where that's where that big ass honking thing was. Yeah. The monitor and the screen and everything is just so big.
Ours was next in the dining room. Like, there was my dad like set up a little like table. It was next to the curio cabinet in the dining room. And it was, that's where ours was. And I remember that my neighbors, theirs was in their family room. So one could be like, they had a pretty large family room. So it was against one of the walls in the family room. I just find it so interesting where people had their like family computer. Where was your family's computer? It's like having a family Victrola or like something like the family telephone in the hallway. So it's very, so.
Because you also had to have a space to put the huge monitor, the huge actual computer, the printer, you know, like where the paper would then shut out. So it's like you have to.
When it would shut it out. From the rooftops.
And then you remember the paper would come out and the sides would have little holes and you would have to like bend them over.
Oh my
and
God,
then like.
You had that?
Oh, I don't know if I actually did have that, but at one point those existed. Mm-hmm, I'm assuming I did have it.
We didn't have that.
Well, that was the first printer.
We had it at school, but we didn't have it in our home because like the computer was not meant to print anything. Now, what we had was the word processor, which is not a computer. I wasn't quite sure. The word processor we would take out from somewhere. It was like the newfangled typewriter. So we had a word processor and a computer. Don't ask me why. But yeah.
I just remember like, you'd have to put it on. DOS would come and you put like C:/Windows. Like you'd have to like type in like the HTML to start the thing. And like, then it would start. You'd have to like get it right. And then obviously it was like black and green or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember the minute that I was shown Oregon Trail, I was like, oh. No, I fucking love Oregon Trail. I love like the earliest Oregon Trail, the pioneer Oregon Trails. Like it's like I loved it so much. I also felt like I was really good. Like I felt like I wanted to play it all the time. I also was like, if you don't start as the doctor, you're the dumbest because the doctor starts off being rich and can heal people. And so sometimes people will be like, no, I'm gonna start off as like a peasant or like a poor person. I'd be like, well, you don't deserve anything good in life.
Well. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
It's funny. I only played that at school.
Yes.
So I never had it in the house, Oregon Trail. By the time we had it in the house, it was a little bit more advanced than
that. That's accurate.
But anywho, so she's on.
Oh, yeah.
She's,
the show. Yeah, but anyhow.
Anyhow over there. Pimp name slick back.
Back to fucking this hoe that's just like sending us dick pics, early dick pics through the AOL chat room to this poor girl who then like checks it out and is like, screams, shuts her computer down, which is a big ass deal. And the family room runs upstairs and her mom's like, what's up? And she used to be like, he sent me a video. First of all, again, he sent her a video of him masturbating.
A picture.
Okay, so even think about what he did. Mm-hmm. He took a picture. Mm-hmm. On a disposable camera or a real camera?
On a Sony, like a big ass thick block Sony.
He put his dick out, took like my Canon Rebel, was like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an actual camera, you know, and then like got it developed, then scanned it.
I don't know. I think that he did it digitally. Don't you remember the cameras? No, this was in like 99. Girl, like, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. I don't know how
like,
he did it.
Or he did a disposable camera, went to like a CBS, had an asshole that worked at CBS that like was a pedophile that he knew to take it to this guy, got like the digital prints, and then through his Prodigy or like CompuServe account or an AOL account with a horrible name, then sent it to this girl. And by the way, you know that if he's doing it to send to this poor girl, Brandy, he is sending it to me in every chat room that I was in. You know what I'm saying? Because I really cyber sexed a lot. I really can't believe that I'm like, okay. Anyway, so let's move on. The sugar and coffee sketch. I mean, there's all of these. Dan, it's funny because this horrible thing happens with this asshole, but then we're also shown this repeated winking at childhood sexuality through Dan's POV as a comedy writer and producer, where he makes kids enact cum shots or have to fill their mouth with various liquids and stuff and just like taking in all of his jizz.
Yeah, like he,
I mean, what?
Yeah, so how it ends with Jason and Brandy is that the mother then has a conversation with Brandy, and Brandy finally tells her the mother is so upset because she's like, how did I let this happen right underneath my nose? And then they end up going to court with Jason, and there is another child who comes forward with Jason's behavior. Yeah, so the mother is just like upset, and that's where we leave that story for now. Then we start talking about Dan Schneider and all the sketches that he has these kids doing, and we get that not only was the environment like weird, but that the sketches were hard on the kids. Like that the one sugar and coffee sketch where the kids are actually drinking coffee and actually trying to like swallow sugar that's coming out of a huge vat in the ceiling. And it's supposed to be funny, and they're supposed to run around. And it's just like this really base, terrible comedy that I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't think most of that shit was funny. Like if it wasn't Kenan and Kel or like, and even Good Burger, I hated Good Burger. Like, so to me, a lot of the shit wasn't even funny, but Dan thought it was.
It's like base level fart humor for kids. It's like watching someone get slimed is like, it's supposed to be, whoa, I can't believe it. It's so crazy. But it's not funny. It's not, there's no joke that is like, can you believe how hard, like there's no, you know, it's just not, it's not a concept that's funny other than it evokes a reaction, and it's supposed to be like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's like the outrageousness of it.
Yes.
Is what causes the thing. And so then we go to Brian, and Brian is a young African-American kid, black kid on the show. And he's really, really excited to be on the show because he somehow took on the pressure of getting his family, quote, out of the hood. And I don't know what that means, but that's what he said. And he said that he had this pressure. And at first I thought like, where's the mom? But the mom was right there. But he still had this idea that like, it was his job to pull everyone out of poverty. And so he's really excited to be on the show, but he could definitely tell that Dan did not favor him. Mm-hmm. And that his time on the show was tenuous, and it was based on Dan really liking him. And so he wanted to do everything that Dan said. And so he played this character called the youngest rapper, Little Fetus. And I'm like, that even sounds stupid. Like, I don't remember laughing. That sounds stupid to me. So he has to go in this like space with a green screen in a full body leotard. And this is another kid who's uncomfortable being in a full body leotard. And the mother really felt like the behavior of all the adults, especially Dan on set, was just inappropriate. And she wasn't having it. She would speak up, but the other parents would be like, shh, don't say anything. Like, or the other folks on set would be like, you know what, just do it for Brian. Like, you're going to get Brian fired if you continue on this path. And she's just like, I don't care about him getting fired. Like, this is a weird set. And it's just not right.
Yeah. Specifically, like, yeah, like they make them do these, as you said, Fear Factor style things, and they are traumatized by this thing that's truly where they instead of like mimicking and making a joke of a thing, like of an actual show that adults choosing to do these, whatever, be memory, we remember this, like being trapped with scorpions or the fucking spiders everywhere, whatever the fuck, literally like the traitor's escape room episode, but LOL. these children are part of this thing where it's like they, the sketch is they just get chosen like the lotto or whatever, like horrible. And then something scary gets to happen to them and it's real. Like those are real things. And it's funny because you could have made that a sketch where it's like, what if you had, what if you were like, what if you were like, kids, you're going to be terrified. And you're like, oh my God. And then it's like, you get there and it's like, get in there, eat all the ice cream. You're like, oh, you're like, no, you know, like that'd be like a sketch. Like, you know, they're like, they're treating them like they should be terrified. And the kids get there like, I get to eat all this ice cream. And they're like acting like it's, you know, like that'd be like, you know, there'd be so many ways to do it. And that's what they're on, a sketch comedy show. So it really goes to show how lazy the writing is. Also how these kids and their like wherewithal and their like, their sense of safety is not being accounted for. It's not like being treated well. These are cast members. These are ensemble regulars of a sitcom. You know what I'm saying? Like these are little friends. You know what I'm saying? Like, in the sense of you would never be like, hey, Jennifer Aniston, at the height of Friends, like, we're going to have an episode where you're like having a tarantula crawl in your face. She'd be like, absolutely fucking not. I'm having my agent call. You know, I'm Jennifer goddamn Aniston. You know what I'm saying? But because these kids are not made to know that they have any power, that they're like images being used, that they are actors, their talent in some way, like what these kids are giving is their image, their likeness, their talent to read copy in an effusive and or energetic way. That's all you can ask for them. They're literally being tokenized of like this one and that one. We need this one. We need that one. Little Fetus. It's very obvious why he gets Little Fetus. It's a young rapper. I'm not going to give that to like, you know, the weird brown haired girl that gets kicked off, you know, or whatever. It's just, having said that, let's move on. So Dan gets more and more verbally abusive. The director is kind of like on their side, is the only one that kind of like helps them.
His name is Virgil, and he was the one who was really opposing Dan. Not all the time and not in every scenario, but he did his best to kind of protect the kids and whatnot. And it's funny because when they talk to the kids, they're like, all of them mention that the Fear Factor one is the one that they all hated doing because they never knew what was going to happen. Like Brian had peanut butter put all over his body and had all these dogs come and lick all the peanut butter off of him, which is like disgusting.
The thought of a billion tongues on you like that, like I don't even like when one dog licks me, that I like that dog. Like A, because it's like dog's mouth, but B, like the actual feeling of a bunch of, that's orgy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just so inappropriate. Just
sorry.
We'll just let it happen. Yeah. And it's just really, really inappropriate. So we then get more scenes about how Dan acted like all the cast members were his little angels of Charlie's Angel. We have a little skit where they all run around, they hear his voice, and so they're waiting to get direction from him. Mm-hmm. And then we have some scene with the editor, and the editor would talk about how she was working from 8 to midnight to edit an episode. And I was confused about that because I was like, one, is there not like a guild or like a union that you could be a part of that would see that as like wildly inappropriate for him to do that, because she, you know, she was an adult during this. And then two, what was she editing that took all that time? Was she editing one episode and it took that long? So it was just confusing. I wanted more detail as to her scenario, but he would then not talk to her. He would tell like his assistant to talk to her. Oh, tell her to do that. Like he would be in the editing room behind them, just barking orders. And I was like, Dan, at that point, why didn't you do it yourself?
Edit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think that it might be a non-union show. I'm not quite sure what guild she was part of, if she could have been a part of a guild. Maybe it was a union show. Early cable like that, it's confusing to me.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that she's editing sketches. So she's editing sketches, and then she, and unfortunately, because they're not that funny, it's her job as an editor to make them any sort of funny. So she's editing a sketch, setting it back. He's like, not funny. I need this, not this. And then he's going to even judge whether at the end of the day, that sketch will make it into the entire show. So it's not even like she gets the wherewithal to like put together a whole piece. She has to edit enough sketches to make him an episode that makes him happy. Oh, and okay. Then the timing within each one to like make it, you know, the same time.
Okay. I see. So he was abusive to her, and then he fires her because she, I don't know, said something, and then hired someone who had little to no experience in it. So it was just another professional who worked for him, female, who had a really bad taste in their mouth because of the way he treated them in the workspace. Mm-hmm. So then we have another person who is Virgil. Remember I spoke to him about him earlier. He's the director. So he fires Virgil one day and doesn't even tell Virgil to his face. Like, mm-hmm. it's like him and Virgil were cool in the beginning, mm-hmm. but when Virgil started to have, you know, issues with the way he was treating the kids, it got weirder and weirder. And finally one day someone just walks up to Virgil and is like, "Hey Virgil, we're not going to need you for the next shoot. So you can go ahead and go home." And he's like, "What?" Like, he knew what was happening as soon as it happened. And he was like, "If Dan has a fucking problem with me, he should come fucking tell me." But yeah, that's how he fired Virgil. And Virgil was very upset. He says to this day, he still holds a grudge against Dan for the way that happened. Mm-hmm. And then they actually pan back to him when we talk about something from scene episode 3, where he's shocked about that as well. So it's like Virgil's also getting information about how the kids were treated outside of him being there and, you know, whatnot. Yeah, as well. So we then find out that Dan gets a lot of massages. There's a lot going on where he would call people to come massage his back. And then we have the final scene where Brian gets kicked off the show. And it's because of his mother. And when his agent, so they're back home in New York City or whatever. And Brian thinks that he's going to go back to the show after being on there for 2 seasons. And the agency calls him and his mother in the office, and they tell him that he's not going back, and he is upset. And at that point he blames his mother for that happening. And it ruins his self-esteem. And I just like the mother, she mentioned something that I thought was interesting. She says, "You could tell that a man had just lost faith in his mother." And I'm like, he was 12 or whatever. So I was just like, I was interested in the relationship between Brian and his mother and like where it is now. And, you know, just could you imagine just one point in your life, just that being that pivotal place? He suffers from alcoholism, and so do other cast members from this show. And I just wonder, do all child stars like feel that, and do they all like come out of it not okay, and what does a parent have to do to make sure that their child is okay and safe, and how can this be avoided going forward? You know,
she saved her son's life and he didn't realize it. All he saw at the time was, I don't get to have my dream that I had access to because of my mom. And it's so fucked up.
Yeah.
And he's not able to understand everything and to see what she saw, and to even see the sketches that we're seeing through our own adult eyes. And she was an adult then. I mean, she was like, she probably was like, I'm in a fucking delusional nightmare. Like, hello, are you saying? Like, you know, she must have, I feel so bad for her.
Yeah. And then we've got, we go back to Jason Handy at that point. So with Jason Handy, when we go back to Jason Handy, the police are coming after him. They raid his apartment.
Oh yeah.
And in that raiding of the apartment, they found so much child bad stuff. Starts with a P in his apartment, like thousands and thousands of pictures of that kind of stuff. And like they found a journal.
The journal's first of all, again, early internet, like he's going into the darkest of the reaches of the internet at the time to find what he's finding. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is what I want to say. They found journals, where basically he is just like, I'm a full blown pedophile, A. And also B, I don't know how much longer I can take it because I'm constantly fighting the fucking urge. And he says to find a victim to rape. First of all, that's horrible. Please. I couldn't believe so much of it. Like, he knows what he's doing is horrible. Like, he's writing this down, like writing in a journal. Like, it's crazy to me. Like, I mean, I don't know, like the mindset of someone who has pedophilia, like does this, is so other to me. I cannot even imagine it, you know, like, anyway, so.
Yeah, it is. They find so much. And he then goes to court. Brandy has to testify against him. And he ends up getting time, but not enough. Not fucking enough.
Yeah.
He can't work on Nickelodeon. And then we get introduced to another person, Brian Peck.
Yeah.
And Brian Peck is labeled as a dialect coach, as well as, I guess, the same thing that Josh does.
No, he's a dialect coach, an acting coach, and also an actor. So what he does is, dialect coach is like low-key an acting coach on set. You know, like it's just a way to like have someone, the director, if he's looking at like shots, have somebody like, hey, can you work with that kid? So if the kid's saying something super stiff, Brian would be like, hey, buddy, you know, when you're just like picking up a sale and you're like, yeah, you know, it's like that.
Oh, feeding lines.
Yeah.
Great. I felt something in that too. Like during part of this, they did talk about how they would feed the kids lines. And I'm like, that's annoying.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. So anyways, then Brian is like Pickle Boy. I don't remember that character at all. It sounded fucking stupid. And he just walks around with like a giant, giant platter of pickles. And then he, I mean, there's even a weird sketch where
the glory
like,
hole.
Yeah. There's a weird sketch where Brian is feeding pickles through a hole in the wall to Ray Romano. Was that Ray Romano?
Yes, it was. It's a glory hole.
It's a glory hole. And I'm like, does Ray Romano not know this is a glory hole?
That's okay. This is LOL to me because Ray Romano is a comedian. This man has spent at least 20 years of his life. And I know he's famous, late night comedy. So I know that this man knows that's a dick.
Okay.
I know. There's no way that Ray Romano does not get that he's being fed a dick through a hole like a glory hole and has to act off it. Now, I am just going to guess that it was this thing that was like, look, the kids don't know, but the adults do. And so it's funny both ways.
I don't know that any point in my career, unless it was actually on an adult thing and it was so hilarious that I would bend down as any grown person and allow someone to feed a pickle to me through a hole in the wall.
You're right. Not even a person.
Ray Romano allowing Brian to feed a pickle through him.
Yep.
Like that's what I'm saying. Like it couldn't have been, his show was in the 90s.
Yeah, he's at the height of his fame. That's why he's on the show. He's guest starring on the show because he's already famous.
And he...
Allowing
that to happen. And I'm like...
A baby. Put a dick in a mouth. Put his dick in his mouth.
A baby? What are you talking about?
It's a child.
No, it's Brian.
Oh. Sorry.
It's Brian.
You know what? There's two Brians on this show. There's the Brian Peck, and then there's Brian Fetus. And so that's my fault. That's what Brian I kept saying.
Peck. Brian Peck feed a pickle through a wall
on a kid's show.
On a kid's show to Ray Romano. And Ray Romano, I can't even imagine what show I would let that happen on. It was that joke so funny that Ray Romano, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was not. And so everyone loves Brian. Everyone trusts Brian. Brian has parties at his house, and his house is like a kid's dream because it's filled with knickknack and paddywhack. I mean, he has his garage, he turned into a Planet of the Apes, just like memorabilia, the Charleston Heston 1968 to 1982 Planet of the Apes, all 10 of them, just like the shrine to him. And then one of the kids is in there and he sees this like picture of this clown or something he sees that feels out of place in this Planet of the Apes space. And he asks Brian about it. And Brian is like, yeah, this was signed by John Wayne Gacy. And then we find out, and we don't delve into it anymore, that Brian was like pen pals with John Wayne Gacy at some point. And if that isn't a red fuck, and for those of you who don't know who John Wayne Gacy is, he was a serial killer in like, I don't know, the 50s, who dressed up as a clown, was this part of his like part-time gig. He was a party clown for children's parties, and parents would hire him out. And then that's how he kind of picked his victims. Mm-hmm. And he would kill them. He would essay them and kill them and like bury bodies and shit of like kids. And so for a grown man in the 90s to have a signed and to be so proud and excited about it and have a signed thing, like, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to be in love with serial killers. You're not allowed to be in love with serial killers and that kill kids and work on a kid show. You're just not allowed to do
no,
that.
No, you're not. If you thought you were, fuck you.
Yeah. But you could be obsessed with them and keep that to yourself. If you are writing a serial killer in prison, go ahead and keep that to yourself.
Yeah. So basically, this is where the docuseries then takes a little bit of an interesting turn. They're like, look, Brian Peck ends up getting arrested for sexually assault. And for the first time, we're going to talk to the child star that was instrumental in putting him behind bars. And so it's like a kind of like a figure goes and like sits
down
in a chair. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like it's a thing. And that figure ends up being actor Drake Bell.
I had no idea who it was because I didn't watch the Drake and Josh show. So yeah. I was like, oh no. Yeah. Oh. I was like, I didn't know who that was.
But do you know who Drake Bell, like, had you from this moment, had you heard of him?
I had to look him up.
Okay.
Yeah. I had to look him up. And then I was like, oh, okay, I vaguely remember that face. But I was just too old to be interested in this person who's like 15 in the year 99 or whatever, how old he was. Like, I was too, yeah.
Yes.
And so then how they break it to the cast, though, is that they sit all the cast in a room. They ask the parents to leave. And the parents leave. And I am so confused. But again, I wasn't there. I don't know what it's like being a parent of a child actor. I don't know. So the parents leave and the lawyers come in and they say to the kids, someone's been, either they say Brian's name or they say someone has been.
No, Brian. They say Brian.
So Brian has been arrested for hurting kids. And the kids are like shocked, shook, all those things. And then they're like, does anyone have anything to say?
Right now?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Are you expecting the kids to be like, me too?
Oh my God, Brian. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like literally, it's like literally asking them. So anyone want to say anything and anyone else get touched? And the kids without their parents are like,
who is, like, they don't know who it is. They're like freaked out. They can't believe it. And then the lawyer's like, great. If you have any questions, you can come and see us. And he gets up. It was like a fucking meeting in corporate America where like the lawyer comes in and says some stuff and then just like leaves. And like, then the kids are expected to just go about their lives. And like, I don't know. That was Nickelodeon's way, I guess, of checking to make sure if anyone else had it. Like, I don't know.
One of the kids is like, yeah, Dan was there. And they kind of go back and they're like, and Dan releases like, Dan throughout the docuseries has like one word kind of, or one sentence kind of like, whatever defenses to certain allegations. And then at the end, he has his overall, like, I'm sorry, I did things wrong. But at here, he's like, I had no part of telling the children about the sexual assault. Meanwhile, the kids are like, well, you should have, because you hired this person to create the show. And we have eyes. We were there also. And you were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
How do you have, like, there's a bunch of people that are like, we saw you at this. This is a marketed moment in our lives. And all of us saw you here. What the fuck are you talking about? So we're going to go into the next episode basically from that moment. But obviously this is very hard. It's hard to talk about, but also it's weird because it's something we were a part of.
So many mistakes were made. And I'm just like, where was HR? where was anybody risk management? Where was anybody there to be like, and I guess it's just because what did they have? The newspaper? So like word didn't spread fast. I just don't know. Like, I just don't know. But you know what? I think that in the light of, or in the aftermath of Me Too, I think that we have a lot of folks who had been going through a lot of abuse for such a long time. And it's only within the last 10 years, you know, that we've been able to, not even that, less, that many people have gone down for the behaviors that have been kind of pushed away. Mm-hmm. And so I forget that things like this did not just get blown up in the way that they would now. I mean, because the Diddy thing is like, girl, flying wild. As soon as Cassie put something out, and even before that, but as soon as Cassie and then that other dude put something out, like it has, you couldn't cover it up anymore. And so we're just in a different time now. And so it feels wild that that was able to happen, but yeah, it did. All right, you guys. So thank you so much for joining us. If you would like to see the visuals of what you're listening to, please join us on patreon.com/docusubedies for $10 a month. You get the visuals again of what you're listening to, as well as exclusive content. We did Love is Blind exclusively on our Patreon, and the patrons will get the episodes usually faster. So if you're interested in that, please join us on patreon.com/docusweeties. But if you can't do that, Chris will tell you how you can support us.
Will you go to your little Instagram app and type in our Instagram and follow and like all of our things, and then do the exact same thing on TikTok, X, and all your other social medias. We are at DocuSweeties on all of them. Also, we have a Facebook group. It's the DocuSweeties Podcast Facebook group. If you haven't yet, we need those 5 stars. Mm-hmm. We need that rating, honey. We need it. Mm-hmm. Because we realize it's almost like the only way people can like see that we're a listened to podcast. Like that's the way people tell that. Because like you can't tell if a podcast is like big or listened to really until you just like look and see how many ratings they have. And it's like a weird currency. But it's free for you to give. And also really important to us. We thank you so much for listening. Hi.
All right. Bye.